Okay, our final speaker is Samantha Herrera, and she will be talking. She holds a master's degree in public health with a specialization in social and behavioral sciences. I think you're beginning to see a theme here. From Johns Hopkins University, in her current position as a monitoring evaluation specialist at ICF International, Ms. Herrera provides technical assistance in the development of monitoring and evaluation strategies and plans for health programs in Africa and Southeast Asia. She has experiences in qualitative and quantitative research, survey design and analysis, and the evaluation design and implementation. And she will be speaking on drivers of safe motherhood behaviors in Zambia, facilitating factors and barriers for family planning, antenatal care, and postnatal care.
So today I'm going to be presenting the findings from a formative research study that was carried out in Zambia that looked essentially at the drivers or influencing factors of family planning use as well as maternal and child health service use in Zambia. This study was conducted by the USAID Communication Support for Health Project in collaboration with the Ministry of Health in Zambia. The study was conducted about a year ago. And the findings from the study were used to develop a national safe motherhood health communication campaign. So just before I begin the presentation, I just want to say that there are no personal financial relationships to disclose. So in my presentation, I will begin with a brief overview of the maternal and child health situation in Zambia. I'll review the objectives of the study, the methodology that was used, some of the key findings that came out of the study, and then some key recommendations that were put forth to inform the development of the health communication campaign. So in terms of the maternal and child health situation in Zambia, Zambia has one of the highest maternal and child mortality rates in all of the world. And some of the influencing factors that influence these high rates are low use of modern family planning methods at only 25%. So we'll see in Zambia there's been a high fertility rate for a number of years. Another influencing factor is the inconsistent use of antenatal care services as well as late initiation of antenatal care. A high percentage of home delivery, over half of women in Zambia deliver at home in the presence of unskilled personnel. And then lastly, there's very low use of postnatal care services. So again, only about half of women are accessing postnatal care services. So the main objective of the formative research study was to learn about the influencing factors for safe motherhood behaviors, as I said, to inform the development of a national communication campaign around safe motherhood. So the specific objectives included to identify the factors that influence the practice of these safe motherhood behaviors, to identify what and from where or from whom both men and women learn about safe motherhood information, and lastly, to explore which messages, communication channels, as well as strategies will help to encourage safe motherhood behaviors. So this was a qualitative formative research study that used in-depth interviews with four main target audiences. First, mothers of children under 5 years old, pregnant women, fathers of children aged 0 to 6 months, and then lastly, community health workers and healthcare providers. So the research focused on identifying barriers as well as facilitating factors in the following five main areas. So family planning use, antenatal care use, labor and delivery, danger signs and care seeking, and this is danger signs both before pregnancy as well as after pregnancy, and then lastly, postpartum maternal and newborn care. This study was carried out in both urban and rural areas in five districts in Zambia. So we selected the districts based on their performance in three different areas: ANC coverage, immunization coverage, as well as delivery by skilled personnel. So we chose a mix of districts that were both high-performing as well as low-performing in these different areas. And then our participants were recruited from health centers in these five districts. So now I'll go through some of the key findings. First, around family planning use. Actually, just before I go into the findings, I want to make an important note. As you'll see as I go through, there are a little inconsistencies in some of the findings. And this is reflective of the fact that we included or made sure to include participants that were both users of these services, as well as participants that were non-users or inconsistent users of all of those services that I listed. So as you'll see, there are a few inconsistencies, but that's reflective of having different perceptions from both non-users as well as users. So some of the barriers that were identified for family planning use were the side effects that participants are experienced, lack of alternative options if one method is not satisfactory. In some cases, there were stockouts at health facilities. Among some women, there was a lack of knowledge of the different contraceptive options, as well as an understanding of the different side effects. Some women reported that they thought that contraceptives were not effective. And then lastly, the belief that contraceptives can cause other health problems, as you'll see reflected in the quote there. Some of the facilitating factors for family planning use was that, and this finding is amongst women who are consistent users of family planning, the perception that they do work well. In general, there was an understanding of the benefits as well as the use of contraceptives. In general, there is easy access as well as wide availability of contraceptives at health facilities, as well as a variety of methods available, though some methods were only available at higher level facilities and not at some of the lower level facilities. And then lastly, one of the facilitating factors is that many of the participants reported that they did get support for use of contraceptives from both healthcare personnel, friends and family, and in some cases, spouses. Some of the key findings around antenatal care use. Some of the barriers that were identified to early initiation of ANC was that many women felt that they actually had to wait for the pregnancy to show before they could go to the healthcare provider. The fear that they would have to take an HIV test. And then lastly, low partner involvement. And in some cases, the husband wouldn't actually allow the partner to attend ANC. Some of the barriers to consistent use of ANC included long distance to health centers, the low importance that is attached to ANC, a low risk perception of pregnancy, and this was particularly among women who had had other pregnancies. So if they didn't experience any complications in previous pregnancies, they didn't feel that they were at high risk. And then other competing demands, so employment, other income-generating activities, or taking care of other children. Some of the facilitating factors for antenatal care use was that women did recognize the benefits of ANC. Again, that they received support from family, friends, and partners to go to ANC. There's a perception there that there is a good quality of care, as well as the information and lessons provided, they felt that those were benefits to going to ANC. And then a few participants also reported the availability of wide range of services, as well as trained service providers were also motivating factors to go to ANC. In terms of some of the key findings around labor and delivery, some of the barriers that were identified include the inability to buy items for delivery, and that includes the basic layette, so the clothes for the baby and the towels, and the perception that items were actually a requirement to be able to deliver in a health facility. Another barrier was inadequate preparation for birth, perception that there was a lack of risk in pregnancy. Some women reported that they miscalculated their expected date of delivery, or they failed to recognize actual labor signs in time to be able to go to the healthcare facility. And then lastly, one of the barriers was inadequate space in mother shelters to meet the demand of all of those that wanted to stay there. Some of the facilitating factors for labor and delivery was that in general, women did prefer to deliver at health centers. that health centers did accept a very basic layette, so it didn't have to be that they brought in new clothes. They could bring in used clothes as long as they were clean. And then some women did report that they had a high perception that there was that they would encounter complications during delivery. Some of the key findings around the danger signs as well as seeking care. Some of the identified barriers included failure to actually recognize danger signs and seek care, reliance on taking some type of home remedy. Some participants reported using herbal remedies to help manage danger signs. In some cases, women would trivialize the danger signs that they experienced, not thinking that they were severe or other barriers included that women wanted to appear that they could actually manage those complications on their own, so they perceived those complications as minor and they could take care of it themselves. Distance to health centers was another barrier, as well as lack of preparedness for emergencies. Some of the facilitating factors included that the perception that the quality of services at health centers is good, and along with that, they reported that they had confidence in the health staff, the healthcare workers. In general, that most mothers desired to deliver at the health facility to be able to have a safe delivery as well as a healthy baby. There was a perception among many women that there was severity of complications that they could experience. And then among most participants, there was really quite high knowledge about different danger signs. Lastly, the key findings for postpartum care. Some of the barriers that were identified here were that mothers were often confined at home after delivery until they actually recover. So they're missing those critical first few days to attend postnatal or postpartum care services. A lack of understanding by women of the benefits and importance of postnatal care. Again, the distance and transport is another issue. Failure to recognize any danger signs and seek appropriate care after delivery. Again, another reliance on home remedies. And some women did report that they felt that there was a lack of trained staff at clinics. Again, that was kind of an inconsistent finding. Some of the facilitating factors for postpartum care included the opportunity to learn about early detection and management of complications after delivery, the perception that they are susceptible to complications, and then lastly, this is an interesting finding, that they did feel, the women that did go to postnatal care, felt that they did receive a tangible service, so they saw that their baby was weighed, that they received vaccinations. So some of the key recommendations that were put forth for the Safe Motherhood communication campaign included the following. The first are cross-cutting recommendations. The first was to design an intervention to improve interpersonal skills among health workers, to use community health workers to proactively disseminate information. And the reason for this was to be able to reduce reliance on community members for information by providing more learning opportunities by healthcare workers and community health workers. Some of the key recommendations around family planning was to provide more information on other contraceptive options, to provide opportunities for the public to access information on contraceptives from health centers, to reduce the influence of other community members who are discouraging them to use or to not use contraceptives. In terms of antenatal care, the recommendations were to use more teaching aids to enhance understanding by pregnant women and mothers, and again to put an emphasis on the importance of early initiation of ANC care. Around delivery and postpartum care, the main recommendation was to encourage male involvement in reproductive health issues. So what we saw was that men were somewhat involved in ANC care, but really not in terms of delivery and postpartum care, so to encourage their involvement through all of that process. Other recommendations included emphasizing equal importance of postpartum care for both the mothers and the baby. Often mothers felt that it was more important for the baby and not for themselves, so to recommend or to ensure that they understood the importance for themselves as well. And then lastly, the last recommendation was to use local role models and communities to disseminate information on the benefits of health facility delivery. And that's it.
Thank you very much. I think it's very exciting that so many of our presentations today have complemented each other, supported each other, looked at it from different places, and found a lot of the same things. I'm going to have a few minutes for conversation. I'm going to ask the panelists if they have a few minutes to hang around after to also, so you feel if you don't your question doesn't get answered, that you can come and speak to them individually. I am just going to add something about the non-breast milk things that infants get, at least in Africa. There was a quick mention of palm wine in Cameroon. In Rwanda, it's often banana beer. So I think it's another, there are cultural beliefs about the benefits, and I'm not going to get into discussion of it, but it's just a finding that I've seen elsewhere in sub-Saharan Africa that I think bears some research. Do we have any questions for our panel? Yes. Nice and loud, because we don't have a microphone for everybody.
Thank you all for your presentations. They're great. My question is for Kate. I was wondering if the opinions of the individuals that shared their perspective on breastfeeding differed if the breastfeeding mother was HIV positive, or if their opinions were the same regards to the HIV status of the mother.
You might want to come and take the questions here just because of the...
Can we do
that?
It
doesn't want to come. There we go. Please.
Just to restate your question was whether there are differences whether the mother was HIV positive or not. When we conducted our semi-structured interviews and our focus group discussions, we did not ask the women whether they were HIV positive. We didn't want them to have to disclose that. So
my question though is actually not of the people who are sharing their mm-hmm. perspective, but if their perspective of breastfeeding in the community of whether the women who were
HIV positive. Yes, we certainly did find that. And there was also an interesting result from our qualitative research was what the health workers knew. One of the obstacles we know is that WHO and UNICEF has changed their guidelines about this, and it has confused the health workers, so then it has confused the women, because that's where they receive their education. So we indeed did find that that was the case. We had a couple of women that said to us, well, no, if she is HIV positive, she shouldn't be breastfeeding at all, which of course brings up other issues, because how are they going to have formula milk? How are they going to actually be able to do this? There is also some confusion because the prior recommendations from WHO was that they would completely stop breastfeeding after 6 months, and so that did come up. That some of our women were saying, well, they can breastfeed for 6 months, but then they need to completely stop. So actually, a secondary finding of this was to train the health workers, and that was something else we did later on as part of this project, was to train our health workers to make sure that they were updated on the WHO findings. Thank you.
Please. Nice and loud so everybody can hear.
Thank you. Yes, I would also like to thank all of you for excellent presentations. And this question is open to any of you. In regards to incentives, rewards, recognition, what your experience has been with that, both a positive and a negative.
Anybody want to take that one?
Not what I spoke about today. The experience that we had in the Jarkon model was that we did create this, well, that's actually the civil surgeon within the district that we were working in, created a reward and recognition system. And they established criteria for what that would be to honor those A&Ms, and then offer that certificate and a picture. So it was a relatively small level of effort, but it did seem to help with the motivation and the recognition. I don't think I have a whole, and we use reward and recognition or encourage that across a lot of our programs, but I don't know that I have too many bad stories about that. I think it just doesn't get done enough. And health workers' work is often unrecognized, and so they feel really taken for granted and not motivated.
Oh, thanks very much for taking that as an example. I'm coming up with low tech and sustainable.
The word sustainability was just mentioned, and I was just going to comment. Several of the papers said that after they stopped paying people, all the work stopped. So that's not surprising. And obviously, in the planning, as much as you can plan to whatever it is that you're doing compensation to be sustainable, is better than creating a situation that can't be replicated or continued, unless you just want to show a short-term impact in a couple of years. Unfortunately, often that's mediated by the funding agency, which says you have to show an impact in 2 years.
Yep.
And then you pour a lot of money in and then it's not replicable. So I'm probably just saying what you want right now.
Miriam, actually, it doesn't come from the presentations here, but in the areas I've seen where they've started with performance-based financing or health financing schemes where there's pay for performance, I've seen a tremendous change in getting TDAs to accompany women to the health facility, and that's coming from their own generated resources, not an outside source. So it's still early in the number of years since these have been in place, but there's a feeling that that will continue after the donor funds have been set up. Behind you, please.
My question is for Rachel. I was interested in the idea about the amount of time that doctors offer to patients compared to the healthcare workers. And there was a sense that the doctors weren't as available. Do you have any sense of how much time differential that is? Because I know in studies in the U.S., the amount of additional time wanted is sometimes just seconds more. But it's not provided, and that makes a difference. So do you have any measure on that?
I don't have a quantitative measure of the difference in time, and it was very subjective because it was the women's report, so it could have been the perceived amount of time. Possibly they were waiting much longer. There's maybe a handful of physicians in this region, so they were covering most of the urban hospital setting, and there's no more than three or four of them. So I'm sure their time was in short order, just at baseline, and so then it was the perception of how much time these women were actually getting. And it could have been affected by several other factors, like how long they traveled, how long they waited, but I don't have an actual measure of the